received a copy of the published agenda. Any additions or corrections to the agenda?
We do have one suggested change. Number two, under myself, CHEER and Senior Center Transportation Funding, we are waiting for information from Delaware Transit Corporation. So,
okay.
I'd like to delete that one and then bring it back, hopefully September 11th.
Any others? Now I'm entertaining a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
Have a motion, Mr. Jones, seconded by?
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Somebody wait up.
To approve the agenda with the amendment, CHEER Center Transportation Funding deleted. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
He's in lobby.
He's out of the room.
He's here.
He's in, is he?
He's in lobby,
sorry. Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Yes, motion's carried. Approval of minutes for July the 24th. Any additions or corrections to the minutes? I have a motion, Mr. Jones, seconded by?
You're seconded too?
Yes, I'll second.
Thank you. Mr. Cole, to approve the minutes of July the 24th. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Yes, motion's carried. Correspondence, Mr. Hackett.
Yes, we have one item of correspondence. It is a letter from Jane L. Staten, CPA, Treasurer of Sussex Teen Court, Inc. It's dated August 14th, 2007. Dear Sussex County Council, thank you for the generous donation of $500 for the Sussex Teen Court, Inc. It will help provide assistance to many of the teenagers being assisted by this program.
Well,
that's it.
Any other correspondence, men of the council?
Nope.
Being none, we'll go to Mr. Baker.
Okay, the first item of business we have is a draft of the capital transportation program for request for the next 5 years for DelDOT. And
CIP.
This is something we do each year, and the county. There is a meeting scheduled on September 6th from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Del Tech in Georgetown, and where a version of this will be presented, and it will be open for public comment. We'd like to review the draft report with you and encourage any input you might have on it. If you flip the first page, page there talks about the importance of the transportation system to the county and how it affects the economy. It's an integral part to our economy, helping the tourism industries, the agriculture industry, and of course general commerce in the county. What's listed as page one is a listing of the various projects, many of which were on this list in previous years, but and then page two talks about planning and the importance of proper planning. This is a five-year plan, and we do think that it is consistent with the county's land use plan as hopefully the state's strategies in growth and spending also. Pages four and five consider one of the more important aspects of the recommendation. That's east-west roadway improvements. Are listed are very many or number of east-west roadways from Route 36 down to 54 throughout the county that help with the traffic in moving from east to west. There are two items here. There's an alternate to Route 24 that's made note of here, and an alternate to Route 26, which are also made note of, which we feel are important to help with the east-west traffic and any congestion. These routes also, of course, serve as evacuation routes in emergencies. We're recommending improvements such as resurfacing of shoulders to highway standards, intersection improvements, turn lanes, directional signage, and so on to help with these roads that where there is considerable amount of traffic. If you flip the page, on page six, there's some pictures, and page seven, there's discussion about Burbage Road, which is an alternate for Route 26, and we are recommending construction of shoulders, turn lanes, and paving improvements there. And this is especially important since Route 26, there with improvements scheduled in the future for Route 26, the outlying roads will be used even more heavily. Pages 8 and 9 talk about Indian River Inlet Bridge and then other bridges in the county. The Indian River Inlet Bridge, of course, is a critical transportation emergency services link on the eastern side of the county. The proposed new bridge will span about 1,000 feet, and none of the piers would be in the water. If this bridge was not in service, it would take approximately an additional 45 minutes to get to BB Hospital from the Bethany area. Other bridges, Old Furnace Road Bridge over the Nanticoke River. This was built in 1919 and needs repair. It's been classified as functionally obsolete by DelDOT, and there's a picture here of that bridge. Lake Girard Bridge in Rehoboth also needs repair. There are a number of other bridges, such as the Reynolds Pond Bridge, I think, which is in this year's budget, too, for repairs. Local road concerns, on pages 10 through 13, there are a number of local road concerns that are listed. Many of these roads are currently used as alternative routes for major thoroughfares. As you can see, there are some pictures that we're well aware of the conditions of some of these roads. We're recommending paving shoulders, turn lanes, and marking of bike and pedestrian lanes. On page 12, again, a number of these roads are listed, such as Angola Road and Camp Arrowhead Road, Double Bridges Road, which I've been told is it's very difficult for even police to pull people over on that road because of the lack of shoulders on the road. Zur Road outside of Georgetown, Trussum Pond Road, Laurel, Sycamore Road, the intersection with Route 13, which has been a problem for years now, Airport Road and Laurel, New Road, Lewis, Oak Orchard Road, Prime Hook Road, Chief Road in Oak Orchard, and Piney Neck Road in Dagsboro. There are just a few. There's some others there, of course. The next on pages 14 and 15, Route 1 improvements. As we're well aware, there's work being done now on Route 1 on the southbound lane, north of Route 24, which has created some bottlenecks. But we are continuing to recommend additional improvements, such as improvements at Five Points, the intersection there, which is very congested and confusing, of course. Route 16 and Route 1 near Milton, which is a dangerous intersection. There's a light there now, and there's a picture here. Western Parkway project proposed from Nassau to Route 24, which would help with some of the local traffic and keep some of the local traffic off of Route 1. Of course, sidewalks, which is my understanding, are under construction along Route 1 or will be in part of the current project. North-South Highway, we continue to believe that there is a need for a limited access type highway in the county, especially in the future. This highway, of course, would take many years before it's before we actually see construction. But Maryland is in the process of dualizing 404 to the west and then the 113 to the south. And we believe the a limited access highway would help alleviate traffic congestion on Route 1 as well as on Route 13 in the future. In Georgetown, on pages 18 and 19, the Arrow Safety Road and Park Avenue, this project we have, you're well aware of. The Park Avenue serves the industrial park. Over 1,000 employees now work at the industrial park. The road is not up to national, we don't think the road is up to national highway safety standards. There is a minimal shoulders along the road. And also the county, of course, is in the process of extending the runway by over 1,000 feet, which is needed for the businesses at the airport so that they can continue to expand. We are asking for the state's help as part of this project to help where we have to move the road, Park Avenue, a little bit to the south, at least part of it, a little bit to the south. On pages 20 and 21, South Bedford Street Extension, Zor Road. This is a intersection in Georgetown. Again, we believe a realignment is necessary due to the increase in traffic with a new Division of Motor Vehicles building done and state offices there. And so that was one of the items that was included last year. Route 30 and Route 5, this is Route 30 is a heavily traveled route north and south from Milford to Millsboro, and it's a way for residents along that area to travel north. And we believe that by improvements to this road would help with the traffic on Route 1 and 13 also. In Bethany, Fred Hudson Road, there are problems with flooding on Fred Hudson Road. Again, this road is well-traveled. It's a major thoroughfare for residents of Cedar Neck. It's used as a bypass around Bethany Beach, and we are recommending improvements to that road as well. The county's industrial park, the county council, our estimate of expenditures over the next 5 years for the industrial air park is over $30 million, and about $600,000 of that is state funded, which is a 5% match as part of the 90% federal airport funding. There's 17 employers at the industrial park with an annual payroll of over $25 million, and at least one employer wants to add about 100 jobs a year in the next few years. So there is this is a very important part of our economy. And then if we flip over to 30 and 31, there's a discussion about signage and the value of these electronic signs, how they would help with evacuation and travel advisories regarding traffic work and public safety notices, and we feel that's important. And then finally, transportation alternatives. As the county grows and demographics change, we feel that there will be greater needs to review transportation alternatives, such as expanded bus service, additional park and ride, maybe even light rail service. And as this also helps residents of the county, because with employees commuting to service-related jobs and jobs with non-standard work hours, there is additional need for mass transit. And then finally, on 32 and 33, there is a discussion about delayed projects. Some of these are projects we've already talked about. One, Route 26 is a high priority for Sussex County. Our engineering department is attempting to coordinate with DLDOT in construction of Route 26 so that our sewer work does not create additional demands on the and delays for the residents there. So we're trying to coordinate, and so any delays by DLDOT on that project means additional delays for the county sewer project at Millville. And then finally, in closing remarks, the county's population is estimated to grow 28% between 2005 and 2020. We are the fastest growing county in the state. Tourism is a major industry and creates additional demands on our transportation system. We are asking that the state attempt to find additional revenues for the roadway improvements in Sussex County. And with that, I'd like to thank Chip Guy and Eddie Sparpaglione, who have helped with this report. And if you have any comments or whatnot, we have till September 6th to present this at the public meeting.
Well, Dave, the improvements on 404 coming towards Delaware, is there any way we could find out what they're, a little more about that? Because it seems to me that if they're doing that to state line, and then we have this two-lane road just for, 15 miles or something.
And they opened the bridge. Mm-hmm. Oh, they opened the bridge the other day.
Well, I haven't been over there in a while. I'm just wondering, is there any way we could get some literature from them to give us a time frame on when they should be completed? And then if Delaware, state of Delaware, DLDOT, has any proposals to, anything in writing, anything that they've committed to. Does anybody have any?
Bobby Geyer is here from Delta. I don't know, would you like to comment on that, on 404, the timeframe for that?
Any kind of commitment at all, or any kind of discussion? I mean, is there any effort on Delta to try to link that one up? Because that seems to me is one of the most critical connections that could be made that would really ease a lot of traffic.
I'm not sure what the timeframe is for the Maryland side,
right,
but I will find out and get back.
Yeah, just if somebody could just give us an update on that, because
right,
the east-west thing seems to me is that's an easy thing to fix.
Well, they don't know on the 404 out on the west side, which is part of my district, no landowner's been contacted for any easements or anything like that. But I was over there this morning because that's what people told us. And the bridge is open, and it's like, it's not that far. You know, they're moving along.
I got flat ground to work with now.
Yep.
No, I know. I'm just saying it just doesn't make sense that Delaware isn't making an effort to make that a priority, because 113, when they fix that in Maryland, we do have dual highway in Delaware, and we do have dual highways with 13, but we still don't have that east-west. I think that's a higher priority than the this north-south or anything else right now. And, of course, Route 26, because I got to get home.
I might not live long enough now.
And Fred Hudson, I use that all the time. Fred Hudson, Route 26, and east-west. That should be the priorities.
In Europe, yeah. Some of them are that stuff that one. But some of them been on the books. How long have they been on the books, Dave? For years?
Probably 2 years, yeah.
I mean,
Number of years.
I mean, I do understand that there is some, you know, issues with some of them, but, yeah.
Okay.
We just,
we'll get back with you on 404.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The next item we have is a draft of a ordinance for your consideration. I'll pass out a copy. And I also had a copy of some comments that were just received yesterday regarding the same ordinance. This draft ordinance would clarify the definition of a forested buffer. And the ordinance was developed by Jim Griffin, Vince Robertson, Lawrence Lang, and input from URDC, the county's land use consultant. And yesterday we did receive some additional input from a landscape architect, which I've also handed out, which could be incorporated in this ordinance. And what I'd like to do is just highlight, and Lawrence is here, and maybe we'll just highlight what this proposed ordinance would do. First, there's on the first page, the definition of forested buffer strip. It's a strip of land not less than 30 feet in width, exclusive of any residential lots, and then added to that would be stormwater management areas or facilities, open space, recreational amenities, wastewater treatment or disposal facilities, water treatment facilities, streets, buildings, or other surface improvements. So none of that would be allowed within the 30-foot forested buffer. And it would be located along the entire outer perimeter of any portion of a major subdivision that is immediately adjacent to lands used for primarily used for agricultural purposes. On the next page, again, it notes the buffer would and exist along the entire perimeter for agriculture of land used for agricultural purposes. A landscape plan would be required for the buffer by a licensed Delaware landscape architect, and this would be reviewed by the state forester and subject to final review and approval of the Planning and Zoning Commission. And then there are a list of conditions which would be part of the forested buffer. It would include a mix of deciduous shade and evergreen trees, majority of which would be local species. Deciduous trees would be capable of attaining a height of 10 feet over 5 years, and the same with evergreen trees. The goal would be that these would be planted in a staggered manner, not in rows, and they would filter views on both sides. The forester buffer would be installed within 18 months from the date site work would commence. The developer would maintain the forested buffer during the construction development phase, or until such time as it's transferred over to the homeowners association. The homeowners association, there would be restrictive covenants and or homeowner association documents regarding the maintenance of the buffer, and that the trees that die, any trees that die must be replaced with similar trees. And then on the next page, it notes that subdividers shall ensure that there'll be no negative impact on agriculture land surrounding the development. And again, it notes that the 30-foot buffer would be along the outer perimeter of the residential subdivision. And it would not be required where there is a Del Dot road or a stormwater drain or outfall. Then finally, the last thing is that the final plat would be approved in writing by the Sussex Conservation District, which is something we're doing by policy now. However, this would clarify that and make it part of the ordinance and make it part of law. So that's to highlight the ordinance. The changes that were suggested by the landscape architect, which we just received, which could be incorporated in this ordinance fairly easily, according to Mr. Griffin, but are not there right now. And they include they would clarify the plantings in the forested buffer. So what the architect is suggesting that we would need to specify the density of the proposed trees. So you can see from the letter how he proposes to address that. Specifies the size of the plants at installation, which would be a little more specific than what we have. So deciduous trees would have to have a 1.5-inch width, 6 feet height minimum, according to his recommendation, and evergreens 4 to 5 feet height. Changing some wording. And then maintenance, the developer would be held responsible for a minimum of 2 years, and where until the responsibility is transferred over to the homeowners association. So those are some of the suggestions regarding this proposed ordinance. And if you have any comments or
yeah, Mr. Cole, comments?
I see the title is up there. Right, and then it goes into the whereases. My only concern is we've now got a definition. We're moving in the right direction. I like definitions, and the trouble I see here is though it's included that it says it's just basically for agricultural purposes. There are many times when we're sitting here and we have conflicts between commercial and residential, industrial and residential. I mean, there's a number of other issues or situations where we discuss forested buffers. I can just see us in the future saying, oh, we don't have a definition only except, you know, when it up against agriculture. So I'd like to see the definition where it says primarily used for agricultural purposes. I think it ought to list some other situations or kind of leave it open-ended so that we have a conditional use or if we have a RPC and there's a conversation about we need a buffer, a forested buffer. We're still talking about the same thing, that we don't play around with it every time it changes. So I don't see why we can't include, you know, all districts, not just the ag residential district. Is there any comments? I mean, why should we just limit it to this?
If you add it into the commercial versus ag or commercial versus residential or the RPC, you need to incorporate it into the zoning ordinance, not the subdivision regulations.
Okay, well.
Also, you basically put it in both.
I mean, can't we adopt, I mean, isn't there anywhere we can just adopt definitions? And the definition basically says this, so the forested trip.
It's two separate ordinances. So it's two separate ordinances, or the subdivision regs or the zoning ordinance. So you have to put it in both.
Okay, is there a problem doing that?
No, I'm not saying there is. I'm just saying that's what we'd have to do.
Okay.
There'd be two ordinances that have to be introduced.
Because otherwise, I see the forested buffer strip being different every time we get talking about it. So, again, we either... All of us are on the same page, or we aren't on the same page.
So
you're saying that commercial property should have a 30-foot buffer?
What do you think?
No, he's saying commercial versus residential, not commercial.
I mean, there's a number of issues.
Commercial versus residential, or commercial to commercial?
Well, whatever. I'm just saying there's a number of times where we have people up here complaining, say, we don't care so much, but we need a buffer strip. We need this. And then the next thing you know, we see a developer come in with a 10-foot one, or this one, or whatever. So the only situation I see is having a good definition is now just for, I guess this is a subdivision ordinance, right?
I don't mind the you're talking about width and...
I'm trying to get one definition for forested buffer.
Just the definition of forest buffer, what it means.
Right, so that when...
And the width would be different according to what the what our zoning says now, Mr. Lane?
No, I would like it to be this.
Council, if you want to...
If you change it to 30, it's 30.
Because 30 is 30, right?
Yes.
I'd like to see if this is a definition, Mr. Jones.
Beg your pardon?
You don't have 30-foot setbacks in some situations.
I understand. That's why that was my question.
Commercial property, the setbacks are the same on the fronts, are all 60. The sides vary from 5 if it's next to commercial to 20 if it's residential.
Correct.
Or 35 on the rear if it's commercial, or 30 if it's residential. So you got different setback requirements.
I don't mind the definition of forestry buffer, but the as far as a setback, I mean as far as 30 foot wide.
Well, how do you put in the ordinance?
But typically, I'm just saying when the opportunity calls for, and we think it's legitimate, a legitimate concern of having a forested buffer, we're all on the same page on what it means.
So basically,
we don't play with the numbers every time I get in.
It's 30 foot where applicable. I mean, like if you've got residential and a commercial, it's
whatever.
It's
whenever
applicable.
We've decided as a group, the consensus is a forested buffer is appropriate. It ought to be that definition.
Well, if it's an RPC, you could, because you can put stipulations on it, or a conditional use, again, because you can put stipulations on it, you can refer to the definition within the Chapter 99 of the subdivision regulations.
Okay, but right now there is no
for compliance
forested buffer requirements in an RPC, right?
Right, unless you stipulate.
Or a conditional use. Well, here again,
unless
it's all over the board. It depends on who's standing in front and how you know we want to do it. So I think we ought to be consistent.
I don't have any problem with the definition. The footage is where you have the issue is yours, because in commercial, it could be a problem. I mean, when you have a 5 foot setback,
well, that's
you're telling
a five foot setback, Finley, is when you're abutting usually typically another commercial.
Another commercial, that's right.
Right.
Correct.
But we're not. That's not the issue.
What's the issue?
There would not be a requirement. There would not be a requirement there for a forested buffer, because I can't imagine a Home Depot worrying about a Lowe's and needing a forest buffer.
Well, I mean,
the issue is typically
you need to put this in all the zonings that you were talking about.
I'm just trying to avoid that we start debating what a forested buffer is every time we have an application up here. With I'd like to get this to become the definition for forested buffer.
Can I try to bring some clarity to it?
Yeah,
Lawrence.
Anything else, Mr.
Sure.
Or Mr. Cole?
No, I'm just trying to follow up on that. I mean, I might have to. I haven't heard anything yet.
If the council directs you to come up with a definition of a forested buffer that we can plug in whenever, for instance, we have a conditional use or an RPC and we have that luxury, you could do that as a separate standalone ordinance. You can't modify this because of the way this is written.
It could be a little different because of the condition of the application, sure, because it's conditional use, or it could be the RPC.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't put it on a rezoning.
So this is something that we can probably move forward with once we've worked out the details, and then you'd come back with a separate.
It would have to be a separate ordinance anyway.
Right. I don't have a problem with that.
And again, if it's a RPC or a conditional use, the council has the right, or the commission has the right to recommend.
Right.
Reference to 99, section 99, or chapter 99 of the ordinance to require those forested buffers as defined in that ordinance.
And the number, and whatever that says, the width and everything, all that definition would be with it.
I would probably want to look at this for a little while, because especially with these recommended additions, we need to come back. I am probably thinking that the open space reference in the definition possibly could be taken out. In other words, this is suggesting that this forested buffer should not count toward open space. And I'm inclined to think that, you know, it should count toward open space. It's unsubdivided land that doesn't have any structures on it. It could be good for the view shed as well as the watershed, and may even offer an opportunity for, you know, wildlife and people to enjoy a trail or something.
Well, you would get more open space then if you left it like this. I thought you all were moving in a direction to protect open space, and here you're, what you're suggesting now would be lessening the more open space. So I thought we were trying to get more open space out of developers, that's the good thing to do.
I think we're there, and to add additional through this ordinance.
We don't have a definition of open space. How can we be there?
Yeah, we do.
What is it?
So here in your land,
it doesn't.
No, I didn't. That's not a definition. They sat there the other night. Told you that wasn't a definition.
Okay. Anything else, Mr. Phillips?
That's not a definition.
I'm sure there will be once we study this, but
for
now,
working
yes.
On a definition.
Mr. Rogers.
I like things in black and white, and this has to be tweaked. And as far as the 30-foot, as Mr. Cole was speaking of, I don't disagree with that because it needs to be in the subdivision and the zoning ordinance to specify where applicable. Trees are trees, and it's going to be 30 feet. 30 feet's a deal, and that's if it's black and white, there's no gray area for a matter of interpretation by legal counsel to say, well, maybe it's different. So black and white's what I like, and if you want to plug a number into it in the subdivision and the zoning ordinance, I'm for that.
Mr. Jones?
I just got, and I talked to you earlier, Lawrence, about a couple of problems I had, or not problems, but questions about, and I got just a couple other things because I haven't, the suggestions that the landscaper architect made, I think, are certainly good things to plug in. If we go to that section, the only thing, it goes number F, it talks about the developer having a two-year commitment. But do we require, I know we require certain bonds and stuff like that. Would that money be held or somehow, how do we legally, financially, if we make sure they got cash?
The way we're setting it up, through Public Works, when they have agreements that are required, and the agreement would include references to the forested buffer where required. The bonding is for typically the streets and stormwater.
Right.
As soon as they started work, there's additional funds there, and we get 125% anyway.
Right.
We exceed the minimum of the cost of the project.
I mean, that's something that...
Could you anticipate inflation or the changes in cost and all that over a 18-month period? But typically, our bonds are good for 18 months. The reason for the 2 years is that you want to get two growing seasons with your plants to see that they're going to survive.
I understand. I just don't want somebody to go... take a hike.
Yeah, right. Some of the suggestions of the architect were easier to, for an inspector, for example, or someone trying to establish when they plant the trees, it's so much caliper of width, and then it's so many feet tall, rather than saying it's capable of being grown 10 foot in 5 years.
Right.
We wouldn't know.
And then one other question is, if you go back to the ordinance in it'd be page 3, when you talk about the stormwater management, everything. Does that include like tax ditches and stuff? I mean, does that all come in effect because of right of ways and, you know, all the easements?
Well, there's a reference there where it accepts out a provision for a stub end street for future connection. It would also allow for an area that's an outfall for a drainage basin, that type of thing.
So if we have
if there's a tax ditch there, you're not going to allow to encroach into the tax ditch. That's automatic.
If you have a 16 or 25-foot easement, then the buffer would be beyond that 30-foot. Is that
it would have to be, because the tax ditch is a maintenance easement, the responsibility of the district to maintain, so you can't go plant trees in it. They have to come in and cut them down.
And do you think under the soil conservation, when they look at it, we allow, make them sign off that they'll certainly double check us, make sure.
I think that would be good, because right now, because of the situation that we've had on a couple of projects, we're sending a copy of our final drawing to the district, so they know what we have.
Right.
And the preliminary also, so they know what we've approved, because what's happened is we show 30, they only require 10. So they go 10 and drop a slope, so there's certain, can't plant most trees on a slope. It has to be shrubs instead of the trees, so it's not really a forested buffer. It becomes a landscape.
Right. Not
sometimes the word landscape might be better than forested. Forested sounds dense, and it's not necessarily intended to be dense.
Okay. Yes. Thank you, Lawrence.
Are you concerned 2 years is not enough?
I think 2 years is okay, but I just was worried about if the developer happens financially, has something happen that we have a mechanism to be able to draw from.
When's that 2 year start? Maybe that's the issue, because
Well, you said.
They, what they have to do is before they do, they basically have, before they can start site work, they've got to post a bond, go through pre-construction meetings with all the agencies and all the utility companies, so they're all on the same page at the same time. The 2 year is actually growing seasons, and that way there's been two growing seasons before the developer can turn it over to the HOA to take over maintenance. HOA takes over and they got have the trees die and they've got to replace them all right up front, so that's shouldn't have to, they shouldn't have to do that.
Right. Okay.
Would this apply to a tree farm if it was adjacent, a subdivision adjacent to a tree farm?
If it's a tree farm, it's considered agricultural use if they're in have a plan for the tree farm with the Department of Agriculture. If it's somebody just growing trees, you know, have a woods, no. But it's actually a bona fide tree farm that's certified with the State Department of Agriculture.
So
we have some of those that we have to watch.
Okay, so would require this buffer or not?
Would require the buffer.
It would?
Yes. If it's a tree farm. Because it's an agricultural practice.
It's called
it's just
farm.
A woods.
Okay.
For just a piece of woods, no. Unless it's, if it's typically a tree farm, it'd be Glatfelter or Chesapeake Forkwood, somewhere like that. But there's also individuals that do it. And you see signs up that says it's a tree farm. And the Department of Agriculture would tell us at the Technical Advisory Committee report time that we have an agriculture activity being tree farm.
I don't see much difference in that. I mean, sometime, you know, if I've got a farm, if I've got a woods there, you know, sooner or later I'm going to thin it or clear cut it, one or the other.
Well, a simpler way to get around that is just make require it from any property line.
That's what I was thinking. It ought to be in the ag district.
Residential or commercial or whatever, just required.
Aesthetically, it would probably be something very nice in the long run. After if you're out in the rural areas and saw these subdivisions popping up that always had these buffers between them and stuff.
We're having some arguments with a couple of developers that when they got their plans approved, the property next door was in agriculture.
Right.
The property next door comes in with a subdivision application, gets approved. Now the first applicant's got a 30-foot buffer to put in.
The other guy doesn't.
The second one doesn't.
Yeah. Why don't we? Yeah. I would.
It's already there.
But it's
30 feet.
So we would require both of them to have a
30-foot
buffer?
No, unless you change it to require it all around all perimeters.
I mean, would this ordinance require them to have two?
No. Not if it's adjacent to residential subdivision.
If a major subdivision came into another major subdivision, they would.
No, doesn't require anything.
Just one side.
Just one side.
The guy that was there first, because he was obligated to put it in, and he's already started construction and started development, sold some lots, and those people purchased knowing there's going to be a buffer there. So they have to go
but
ahead.
If you had 30 and 30 guys and you had these 60-foot wooded strips around, it would really be, I mean, I think a lot of people out there who are concerned about what's happening in the ag district would find that acceptable because it would give wildlife corridors, it would give open space built into a lot of these. And I think property values, when you back a home up to woods, they can get more money for that than they can when it's backed up to the next neighbor's backyard. So it might end up might end up being better if we just required it everywhere in the ag district.
Okay, where do we go with it from here?
We want to make the change, have a change?
Well,
I would suggest you review it and look at the comments that Jim received from the landscape architect. It was just solicited a response to what we had already written. And for example, in quick summary, if you look at C, it says evergreens being 4 to 5 feet height at installation, because they can be capable of being 10 feet high in 5 years. Well, we wouldn't know it. So it'd be easier to say it's 4 or 5 foot height of planting than it would be to say that it'd be 10 feet tall in 5 years, so we wouldn't know, for example.
Lawrence, based on
maple is like a little tag on a tree. When you buy the tree, it's got a tag on it. It says it should be 12 feet tall within 5 years.
That's your water and fertilizer.
If you take care of it.
Lawrence, I wouldn't mind if we're not introducing anything right now. We're just still looking to review it and maybe possibly put in some changes. Could you give us some wording so that next time it gets put on the agenda, we would see what it would look like if it was required on all parcels in the ag district as a requirement?
Could we for all properties?
For all, yeah, 30 feet just as a flat requirement.
For every project?
In the ag district for every project. Yeah, every
project. Has to be, would you? Excuse me, do I mean?
It's probably a matter of taking out a couple words.
Well, yeah. Could you show us, could you make that change and just so I can see it in writing so, and then the rest of them could look at it. It would be a very positive move for this council to do something like that. So we'll see what it looks like in writing.
I mean, if we're interested in getting something done, we got to be real careful about overextending ourselves here. I mean, you're going to, if you put too much in this, we could have, you know, we could create opposition that isn't there now, and it may not go anywhere. That's why we don't have an open space definition now, because somebody reached for the stars. And
I don't think that's a reason, but
I want to caution you to be.
You want to caution because you don't want to really promote open space. This would promote open space.
I want to move us incrementally in a positive direction. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you got to accept a slice of the pie instead of the whole pie.
Well, this would make everybody equal.
All right.
Instead of one guy having to do it and the other guy not. Everybody would have to do it.
We will take it under consideration.
Thank you, gentlemen.
And you'll bring it back whenever.
Whatever you say.
Okay.
We could bring it back September 11th, I believe.
Okay.
But
yeah. Do we have public hearings that night?
Yes.
We do.
Better be careful because we got a lot on. We're going to be off
2 weeks. Make that another date, please.
Okay.
So we don't rush through it.
Okay.
18.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Baker.
Okay. I also, while Lawrence is here, before
he left.
Okay, well, I'll hand this out. This is a few weeks ago we had some discussion about enforcement and whatnot, and these were some of the things we talked about, and I just wanted to give that to you. And it talks about the bonds that are held by Public Works, and before they're released, planning and zoning has to approve now. Written signature, conservation districts required. The zoning inspectors and public works inspectors are working to check on these developments to be sure that the buffers and amenities and whatnot are followed through with, all the conditions are followed through with. And I think next on the agenda is a resolution for Sussex County Citizen Corps of Council, and that's Joe Thomas. Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
I don't care. Whichever one goes first.
If you have any questions for Tom Baker.
Okay. What do we require now, Tom? I mean, is it by policy or by ordinance?
Well, Tom requires a bond for private roads.
That's by ordinance.
And then.
That's cool. We got here.
Is that the ordinance we got? The thing we got yesterday.
No. All right. Tom require or the Public Works Division requires a bond by ordinance.
Right.
And this change wouldn't release those bonds until not only the private roads are done, but that the buffers are in place, the other conditions, the bathhouse or whatever, you know, all that is in place.
And that, Tom, our inspectors from your division would take care of that, or would Lawrence or?
Well, the actual agreement that we're discussing is very similar to the Ordinance 38 agreement that you guys have already seen.
Right.
The major difference, or one of the major differences, is that we will not own and operate the road after it's completed. And it provides a legal binding between the council and the developer, which we do not have now, per se, other than by ordinance, which is not very definitive on what one does and the other does.
But you're getting into your next topic, right?
Yeah, you're getting into the next topic, Tom. We're still talking about.
We might have a question for you.
Okay.
Yeah, here, so I got some concerns about that one.
Okay.
All right. We're impressed, though, with your eagerness.
Well, I mean, I don't know the difference between Mr. Baker and Mr. Baker.
Yeah, that's right.
That's true.
Man, so.
That is an issue.
Okay.
Your turn, Joe.
Good morning. At a previous council meeting, I brought to you the concept of a Citizens Corps Council for the county. Basically, the Citizens Corps is a national initiative that promotes disaster preparedness within the community. What they do is they promote the citizens to become involved to help prepare for disasters and emergencies. And by doing that, they make the community safer, stronger. And you do that through public education, community outreach, training, and volunteer service. If the county chooses to sponsor the Citizens Corps Council, one of the main priorities would be to encourage the implementation of local councils. We have a couple of those local councils already established, one in Milton and one in Ocean View. Mayor Conaway from Bridgeville has already contacted me. He's interested in forming one in Bridgeville. So there's interest out there. And when I was at the last council meeting and presented this, it was suggested and recommended that we draft a resolution. And I believe you have that in front of you now. Just got passed down.
I'm off the press.
So with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Baker.
It would be up to the council whether or not you'd like to approve this resolution.
Yep.
Didn't that guy come in for?
Yes.
To the motion.
His name was Robert George. He was from the state.
From Demas. Yes.
And what's it cost us? Nothing?
Nothing.
Right. Remember you tried to steal the bag, George?
Yeah, motion.
Be it moved that the Sussex County Council approve a resolution authorizing Mr. Joseph Thomas, Director of Emergency Operations, to promote the mission of the Citizens Corps in Sussex County by establishing a Citizen Corps Council and affiliating as a subgroup with the Citizens Corps on the national level.
Make a motion to adopt the resolution.
Second. I have a motion, Mr. Cole, second, Mr. Rogers, to adopt the resolution titled "Just Reverend Mr. David Baker." Any questions? Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Yes, motion's carried.
If I could make one more comment, on Saturday, this coming Saturday at Dell Tech, there is a Delaware Family Emergency Preparedness Day. Emergency management, Delaware Emergency Management, Homeland Security and public health and social services. There's going to be public displays. It's free to the public. There's going to be some training sessions. Everyone's encouraged to attend. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
You're up.